Today is Thursday, April 16th, and this is the World Socialist Website. Ukraine's Zelensky in Berlin. Germany escalates its war offensive against Russia, by Johannes Stern. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was received Tuesday with military honors outside the Chancellery in Berlin. The imposing scene, featuring dozens of uniformed and armed soldiers, underscored the character of the visit. Snipers were positioned on the surrounding rooftops to provide security for the first German-Ukrainian government consultations in 20 years. The focus of the meeting was the signing of a new strategic partnership between Germany and Ukraine. Then on Wednesday, the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, or UDCG, met in Berlin. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius, together with his British counterpart John Healey, welcomed NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte and Ukrainian Defense Minister Mykhailo Fedorov to the 34th ministerial meeting of the UDCG. Other participants joined the meeting online. The focus was on coordinating the NATO offensive in the war in Ukraine and expanding military support for Kiev. Both events illustrate the aggressiveness with which German imperialism is driving the war against Russia. The official propaganda that the war is about defending democracy and freedom was a lie from the outset. The NATO powers systematically provoked the Russian invasion through the continued eastward expansion of the military alliance, right up to the Russian border, and the transformation of Ukraine into a military outpost against the nuclear-armed power Russia. With the escalation of the conflict in the Middle East and Donald Trump's open threats of annihilation against Iran, which German Chancellor Friedrich Merz cynically justified as diplomatic war tactics, all pretenses are now being dropped in the war in Ukraine as well. Merz and Zelensky visited arms factories together and agreed on measures to return fit-for-service Ukrainian men in Germany to the front line. It must be stated openly, de facto, Germany is once again at war with Russia, and it is continuing a disastrous historical tradition. In the 20th century, German imperialism twice attempted to subjugate Russia militarily, committing appalling crimes in the process. Today, the ruling class is making a third attempt. As in both world wars, Ukraine is a central battlefield. During a joint press conference, Merz openly threatened Russia. He claimed the new strategic partnership was, quote, a very clear signal to Russia that Germany would, quote, not slacken in its efforts to defend Ukraine, unquote, and that Russia had no chance of winning this war. The agreement involves a massive expansion of military cooperation. Since the start of the war, Germany has supported Ukraine with military aid amounting to 55 billion euro. According to the government, a further 11.5 billion euro is earmarked for this year. Specifically, the decisions reached between Berlin and Kiev include joint production and further development of drones, particularly for reconnaissance and for attacks deep behind the front lines, expansion of cooperation between German defense contractors and the Ukrainian war industry, including joint production sites directly in Ukraine, concrete plans by the defense detractor Diehl Defense to supply additional Iris-T air defense systems and to produce launchers and components jointly with Ukraine in the future. Massive expansion of munitions production to compensate for the high losses in the war of attrition against Russia. Development and manufacture of long-range weapon systems designed to enable targeted strikes deep into the Russian hinterland. Continued supply of heavy weapons, air defense systems, tanks, artillery, and military logistics. This is not a matter of defense cooperation, as official propaganda claims, but rather comprehensive war cooperation. The aim is to further escalate the conflict, militarize Europe, and, under crisis conditions, shift the economy to war production, a prospect that has long been openly discussed in strategic papers by European think tanks. An official report by the Ministry of Defense explicitly states that cooperation with Ukraine will contribute, quote, to the development of industrial capacity and technological innovation in Germany, thereby enhancing the Bundeswehr, that is the German army, security of supply, unquote. At the same time, the aim is to exert control over and systematically plunder Ukraine under the guise of reconstruction. The Strategic Partnership Agreement explicitly stipulates cooperation in the extraction of critical minerals. An agreement between the Ukrainian Geological Service and the Federal Institute for Geosciences and Natural Resources provides for joint projects to exploit Ukraine's mineral deposits and to advise state and industrial actors. With this renewed drive towards the east, German imperialism is reviving its historical plans for great power status. In the First World War, control over resource-rich and geostrategically critical Ukraine was one of the German Empire's declared war aims. In the Second World War, the Nazi regime took up this objective and radicalized it in the War of Annihilation against the Soviet Union, which cost the lives of over 27 million people. The historian Fritz Fischer highlighted the continuity of this policy. In his work, titled Hitler Was No Accident, he emphasized that the geostrategic and economic objectives of Nazism were directly linked to Wilhelmian expansionism. Today, the German ruling class is again pursuing the goal of removing Ukraine and other states formerly part of the Soviet Union from Moscow's sphere of influence and bringing them under the control of a European Union dominated by Berlin. In 2022, then Social Democratic Chancellor Olaf Scholz declared that Ukraine's integration marked a quote-unquote starting point for closer European integration, including the states of the Western Balkans, Moldova, and in the long term, Georgia. In other words, behind the German military offensive lie the same imperialist interests as in the 20th century. Since reunification, the ruling class has been working systematically to reorganize Europe under German leadership to assert its global economic and geostrategic interests, increasingly by military means. Germany played a key role in the breakup of Yugoslavia and the NATO bombing of Serbia. This was followed by military interventions in Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Africa, as well as the ongoing support for Israel's genocidal war against the Palestinians and Lebanon and the U.S.-led war of aggression against Iran. Regarding Russia, it is not only economic interests, particularly in raw materials, but also an historical thirst for revenge that is driving the escalation. While all parties in the Bundestag, the German parliament, essentially support the course of war and rearmament, the Socialist Equality Party, or SGP, warned of this development from the outset. As early as 2014, we stated, "History is returning with a vengeance. Almost 70 years after the crimes of the Nazis and its defeat in World War II, the German ruling class is once again adopting the imperialist great power politics of the Kaiser's Empire and Hitler." In Ukraine, the German government is cooperating with the fascists of Svoboda in the right sector, which stand in the tradition of Nazi collaborators in the Second World War. This warning has been confirmed. Germany is now at the forefront of Ukraine's military rearmament, including support for far-right and fascist forces within the state and military apparatus. At the same time, this policy is exacerbating tensions between the imperialist powers themselves, particularly between Germany and the United States. From the perspective of the German bourgeoisie, the struggle for supremacy in Europe and over Ukraine is ultimately part of the preparation for a future confrontation with Washington as well. The only way to prevent the catastrophe of a Third World War is to build an international socialist movement of the working class in Russia, Ukraine, Germany, across Europe, in the US, and worldwide, against war and its root cause, the capitalist system. War powers resolution blocked in the Senate as 10,000 more U.S. troops head to the Middle East. By Kevin Reed. On Wednesday, the U.S. Senate defeated a Democratic Party-sponsored war powers motion aimed at bringing a resolution to the chamber floor calling for the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the war against Iran on the basis that the war was not authorized by Congress. The procedural vote failed 52-47 on a motion to discharge a resolution moved by Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois from committee. The vote permits the Trump administration to continue its illegal war against Iran without any congressional oversight. This was the fourth attempt by the Democrats to posture as opponents of Trump's warmongering, while they know full well that the resolutions will be blocked by the Republican majority, and why they continue to vote for trillion-dollar military budgets. The failure of the procedural motion means that the resolution never made it to the Senate floor, and the merits of the text itself could not be voted on. The vote signifies once again that Congress, which has the sole constitutional authority to declare war, is a willing participant in the collapse of democratic government in the U.S., and the facilitator in the establishment of a presidential dictatorship by Donald Trump. Among the notable votes were those from Senators Rand Paul and John Fetterman. Paul, a Republican from Kentucky, voted for the War Powers Resolution, while Fetterman, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, voted against it. The two had taken the same positions in earlier Senate measures on Iran war powers. In opposing the extremely mild assertion of the constitutional power of Congress, the Democrat Fetterman restated his unconditional support for Trump's criminal war, which has killed an estimated 3,600 people, including more than 1,700 civilians. Fetterman said, quote, "We have to stand with our military to allow them to accomplish the goals of epic fury." The text of Duckworth's resolution sought, quote, "to direct the removal of the United States armed forces from hostilities within or against the Islamic Republic of Iran that have not been authorized by Congress." The resolution does not declare the war illegal, criminal, or a violation of U.S. and international law. Instead, it accepts the framework of the war and argues that Congress has been incorrectly excluded from the decision-making about launching the war and how to conduct it. Republican opponents of the Senate motion defended the president's war-making authority and argued that the military campaign was justified by the alleged danger posed by Iran. For example, Senate Foreign Relations Chairman Jim Risch of Idaho stated that the president has a duty to act unilaterally to defend the U.S. and its citizens, and claimed the Constitution, quote, "clearly gives the president not only the right, but indeed the duty, as does his oath, to protect the United States," unquote. The argument backs the lies told by President Trump, Secretary of State Rubio, and Secretary of War Hegseth that Iran was 2 weeks from possessing a nuclear weapon, and there was an imminent threat of attacking the U.S. Other Republicans focused on the provision in the War Powers Act that permits a limited 60-day use of military force by the president without congressional authorization. This period expires in 16 days. The 1973 War Powers Act was passed after the escalation of the Vietnam War and the exposure of secret U.S. bombing campaigns in Cambodia and Laos by the Nixon administration. It was enacted over Nixon's veto, which was overridden by two-thirds majorities in both the House and Senate. The backdrop to the passage of the act was the horrifying human toll caused by U.S. operations in Indochina, which were hidden from the American public. Estimates of the number of deaths in Cambodia and Laos during the secret wars in those countries are in the hundreds of thousands. The purpose of the War Powers Act was to limit the president's ability to launch or prolong wars without legislative approval. The threat made by Trump on April 7th that, quote, "a whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again," which was widely interpreted as a promise to use nuclear weapons against Iran, would dwarf the crimes of Nixon and Kissinger during the Vietnam War. A similar charade was underway in the U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday with Democrats introducing articles of impeachment against Secretary of War Pete Hegseth for unauthorized war against Iran, targeting of civilians, obstruction of congressional oversight, abuse of power, and several other items. The motion is universally recognized as dead on arrival, given the Republican majority in the House. Even if it were passed, a two-thirds vote in the Senate would be required to remove Hegseth from office. Pentagon Press Secretary Kingsley Wilson dismissed the impeachment motion as an effort to make headlines and said Hegseth will, quote, continue to protect the homeland and project peace through strength, unquote. While Trump announced a two-week ceasefire on April 7th, the pause remains unstable. After talks in Pakistan ended on April 11th without an agreement, the White House moved to impose a naval blockade of the Strait of Hormuz in violation of international law. At a press briefing on Wednesday, the White House said that another round of truce talks is planned in Pakistan. While the Trump administration is publicly talking about diplomacy, the military posture tells a different story. Media reports say that another carrier strike group and additional amphibious and marine forces are moving into the region, with tens of thousands of troops already there from the first phase of the war. The Washington Post reported on Tuesday that the U.S. is sending more than 10,000 additional troops to the Middle East before the end of April. Quoting unnamed current and former U.S. officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, the Post reported that the aircraft carrier USS George H.W. Bush and the ships escorting it, including 6,000 troops, are on the way to the region. Another 4,200 troops from the Boxer Amphibious Ready Group and its embarked Marine Corps Task Force, the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, are also expected to arrive in the next 2 weeks. This buildup is unmistakable evidence that the Pentagon is preparing for a resumption of military operations, regardless of the negotiations. As was the case before the start of the war, the force posture points to a second phase of war rather than de-escalation. The same pattern is unfolding in Lebanon, where Israeli strikes continue while talks are underway. Reporting over the last 24 hours showed continued attacks in southern Lebanon, including strikes that killed medical workers alongside Hezbollah rocket fire and the possibility of new Israeli buffer zone plans. In both Iran and Lebanon, the U.S. and Israel are pursuing negotiations as a mechanism to buy time to allow for the mobilization of military personnel and hardware and escalate the wars in pursuit of their imperialist and annexationist objectives. Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell resigns amid Me Too-style sex scandal, by Barry Gray. On Tuesday, April 14th, Eric Swalwell, a seven-term congressman from California's Bay Area, resigned his seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. With remarkable speed, Swalwell went from front-runner in the race to become the next governor of America's most populous state to political pariah, denounced by Democrats and Republicans alike. On Friday, April 10th, the San Francisco Chronicle and CNN ran lurid accounts by four women accusing Swalwell of sexual abuse. One of the four, a former staffer who has not been identified, claimed that Swalwell raped her on two occasions when she was intoxicated, once in 2019 and again in 2024. The other three accused the then-congressman of sending them sexually explicit and salacious social media posts. Within hours of the appearance of these reports, which Swalwell claimed were fabrications, his campaign managers and Democratic and trade union endorsers abandoned him and called on him to end his gubernatorial campaign. These included leading Democratic figures, such as House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and Senator Adam Schiff. 2 days later, on Sunday, April 12th, Swalwell announced the suspension of his campaign for governor. While calling the specific allegations against him false, he apologized to his family and acknowledged, quote, mistakes in judgment, unquote, evidently acknowledging that he had had extramarital affairs. By then, 50 former staffers had issued a public letter calling on him to resign from Congress, and numerous lawmakers from both parties followed suit, threatening to expel him if he refused. The House Ethics Committee announced a probe, and the Manhattan District Attorney's Office launched a criminal investigation. Appearing on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday, Pramila Jayapal, chair of the House Progressive Caucus, said she would vote to expel both Swalwell and Texas Republican Tony Gonzalez from the House of Representatives. Gonzalez had been under investigation by the House Ethics Committee after having admitted to having a sexual relationship with one of his staffers who subsequently committed suicide. Jayapal said, quote, I think that this is very important that we believe women and that we show people across the Capitol and across the country that we will not accept this kind of behavior, unquote. Here you have the totally undemocratic ethos of the Me Too movement spelled out in all its crudity. Whatever one thinks of Swalwell, and the World Socialist website has no brief for this run-of-the-mill capitalist politician, there is no presumption of innocence, no trial of fact, and no due process. The ethos of the Me Too witch hunters is guilty as accused. Swalwell's political demise cleared the way for the removal of another congressman, Republican Tony Gonzalez of Texas, who had already announced he would not run for re-election after admitting to an affair with one of his staff. The woman, who was married with children, committed suicide. Gonzalez resigned from Congress under pressure from both parties shortly after Swalwell did so. Press accounts claim that billionaire Tom Steyer, who closely trailed Swalwell among Democrats running in the June 2nd jungle primary, would be the most likely beneficiary of Swalwell's removal. Steyer has already spent $110 million on his own campaign, far more than all other candidates combined, Democrat and Republican. Former Democratic leader in the state legislature, Willie Brown, a longtime power broker in the party, told USA Today on Tuesday that the Democrats would benefit from the Swalwell exposure coming before rather than after the June 2nd primary, when Swalwell and a Republican would likely have emerged as the two candidates going forward to the general election. According to the newspaper, quote, Brown speculated that opposing candidates in both parties knew about Swalwell's alleged misconduct, but only Democrats wanted it to come out before the primary. Press accounts based on unnamed congressional officials and aides said that Swalwell's alleged sexual abuse of women on his staff was widely rumored, suggesting that Democratic leaders may well have decided to make use of a sex scandal to drive him out of the race before the primary. Certainly, the top Democrats in California, including Schiff, Pelosi, and most members of the California congressional delegation, responded within hours of the Chronicle exposure, calling on Swalwell to end his campaign and quit Congress. The use of such scandals is invariably associated with a shift to the right in capitalist politics. Swalwell was a well-publicized critic of Trump, particularly in his second impeachment over the failed January 2021 coup. He was a constant presence on cable networks and social media since Trump returned to the White House, denouncing his ICE raids against immigrants and other dictatorial moves. His removal likely means a Democratic governor in California more cooperative with the Trump administration. Republican Congressman Gonzalez had also run afoul of the Trump White House, occasionally voting against Trump's policies and criticizing the most extreme anti-immigrant measures. His district covered the vast rural area along the Rio Grande, from El Paso almost to the Gulf of Mexico. The swift removal of these congressmen is in sharp contrast to the blockade by the Trump administration and the Biden administration before it of any serious investigation into the Jeffrey Epstein affair. The convicted sex offender died in his Manhattan prison cell in 2019, under circumstances that suggest murder rather than suicide. For 7 years since then, and for nearly two decades before his death, Epstein served as both a financial agent and pimp to billionaires, capitalist politicians, and even British royalty. Despite the public denunciations by hundreds of former victims, not a single person other than the deceased Epstein has ever been prosecuted. Last Thursday, in a particularly bizarre scene, First Lady Melania Trump gave a surprise press statement denouncing claims on social media relating to her past association with Epstein. She denied that she had been one of Epstein's victims, or that Epstein had introduced her to Donald Trump, appealed for a congressional hearing to take the testimony of the victims, and left without answering questions from the startled press corps. The Swalwell allegations have temporarily overshadowed Epstein-related matters, and former Attorney General Pam Bondi, fired by Trump for failing to keep the Epstein scandal under wraps, refused to appear before a House subcommittee Tuesday in response to a subpoena. But there's little doubt that further reports and documents on the Epstein case, which implicates wide layers of the corrupt U.S. ruling class, will surface in coming weeks and months. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.